I'll tell you, this sermon has whirled around in my head in about like five different iterations over the course of this week. And finally, what I've come to is that I just want to tell you about someone that I love very much. And if I were to name this sermon, I think I would have to call it "What I Learned About Stewardship by Watching My Grandmother Die." So I guess first I have to introduce you to my grandmother. She was born Barbara Ann Bell, an only child, and she grew up during the Depression. And she met my grandfather, E.W. Elmer Wayne, in Joplin, Missouri. And when he asked her father's hand, her father for her hand in marriage, he said, "Well, sure, but she's got to get her college degree first," which was pretty unusual in those days. So E.W. borrowed a friend's truck and drove her to Drury University in Springfield in the middle of the semester and got her enrolled in college. She graduated with a degree in religious education, and I like to think that maybe if she was born 50 or 60 years later, she would have been a pastor. As it was, she taught Bible studies for nearly her entire life. She read the scripture, she read the gospel reading at my ordination, 3 years ago? And as we were sort of going through everything, I asked her, "Well, Grandma, when did you start teaching Bible study?" She said, "Oh, well, must have been during the war." By which she meant World War II, and all of the young men in the church had been drafted, and so she took over the youth group and began teaching Bible study at that time. And I said, "Well, you're still teaching Bible study now. Did you ever take a break?" She said, "No." I said, even with seven kids at home, you didn't take a break from teaching Bible study every week?" She said, "No. That's what I love to do." So my sweet grandmother, through thick and thin, gave over 70 years of her life in service, teaching Bible study and creating family wherever she went. As I said, she had seven children, four boys, and then two twin girls, and another sort of accidental Christmas baby. After that, she thought she was done, but whoops, here he comes. And so five boys total, twin girls. And for much of their childhood, she was a stay-at-home mom. So they were feeding nine people on one income. My grandfather owned a construction company. And so, as with most seasonal work, there's ups and downs in that work. And, you know, the kids said, "We never knew that we were poor. We never knew that it was a struggle to put things on the table for all of us to eat." But Grandma made it work, and come Sunday, they would all line up and take up an entire pew at South Joplin Christian Church, and there was always something to put in the offering plate, because that's just how Grandma lived her life. So things were pretty thin for much of that time. When most of the kids were in school, she began to work, and she taught special ed in a time when students with mental disabilities were sequestered away and hidden from the rest of their peers. But Grandma just thought they were family. So much so that a couple times a year she would take them bowling with all of her own kids, because they were all her kids. She enjoyed teaching the older students because she wanted to teach them how to have as much independence as possible in their lives. So she would teach them things like basic math, how to sew a button, how to take care of themselves, proper hygiene, a simple meal, And she would offer them the skills that they would need to have dignity and feel like they were truly human in a world that feared them. So things were pretty thin back then. But later in life, she was able to do a lot more. She traveled a lot. And although I don't think I ever saw her wear more than 3 pairs of shoes, when we were going through her closet after she passed, we discovered that she had 42 pairs in their original shoe boxes, all stacked neatly on top of each other in the closet, which is just hysterical to me. 42 pairs. You know, I didn't really get to ask her about those thin times when my mom was young. I imagine that there were some times when she was probably afraid that there wasn't enough to make ends meet, that they were unable to put what they wanted on the table, unable to have the sort of grand Christmases they felt their kids deserved. And yet I, you know, ask myself, well, what would she have said? And I think she would have said, "Oh, McKenna, don't you remember all those stories in the Bible? How God made the world out of nothing and created such beauty? Those tender forget-me-nots and those wild, beautiful elephants in Africa and everything in between. And don't you remember when the Israelites were crying out in slavery, God heard their cry and rescued them. And then when they were wandering in the desert, hungry and thirsty and lost, God heard their cry again and rained manna down from heaven that they might eat. And they didn't have to store it up or hoard it for themselves because it was fresh every single morning." And then, that Christmas Eve, when God came to the world wrapped in flesh so that we could touch and see and hold our salvation, rock him like a baby in our arms, God provided all of that. How would God not provide for me too? You know, which brings us to Jesus, who tells us some pretty hard things in the Gospels. He tells us to give up everything we have, to sell it all. He tells us to commit everything we've got, to leave our families behind in order to follow in his footsteps. He says some pretty challenging things, doesn't he? He's asking us over and over again to give up our fear. At the end of January this year, when she was diagnosed with cancer, they told us it would be fast, and it was. From diagnosis to death, it was 6 weeks, almost on the dot. And in that time, I was able to spend, I was able to go down 3 different times, partially because you have been so generous with me that I might spend that time with her. And I expected her to be afraid of death, of the end, of the pain. And it wasn't easy, but I never observed that she was afraid. Even when she was in a lot of pain and you know, we were trying to catch up to it with the medication, but sometimes we didn't time it right and she would be in pain. Those times when she was kind of delirious, she would often sing. And I remember one time when she was in a great deal of pain and had almost fallen. She started to sing, "Precious Lord, take my hand. Precious Lord, take my hand." She was so, so ready and unafraid. We had these rituals to help her go to bed when we would visit. My mom and I would get her laid down in bed, and one of us would grab her favorite lotion and give her a nice long foot rub. And she would just say, "You don't have to do this. You don't have to do this." "Of course we do, Grandma. Of course we do. You've taken care of us for so long. Please, let us offer this to you." So we'd give her a foot rub, and then we'd sit up on the edge of the bed, my mom on one side and me on the other of Grandma, and we'd sit, and she would take her pain pill for the night and wait while it sort of went down. Swallowing was hard for her. And we'd sit and talk for a little bit until she was ready to go to sleep. We'd tuck her in, and she'd say, put the pillow under my knees, just like that. Pull the blankets all the way up. Can you fluff the pillow under my shoulders a little bit?" Of course. It didn't seem like enough to offer these things to this amazing woman who taught us so much about how to live life, how to open your heart, how to serve God, how to be strong in the face of fear. It didn't seem like enough. And yet, it was just all we had. And when we come to the end of life and stand before God, it just doesn't seem like enough. Just these old bones, these broken hearts. It seems like such a poor offering to give to God, who has given so much and been so generous. And yet, when we stand before our Jesus, he says, "Oh, what an extravagant gift. This is all that I could ask for." It doesn't seem like enough. And yet, in God's eyes, this is all there is. And it truly is enough.